everyone, and welcome to Book Solid. I'm your host, Soraya, and today I am joined by a special guest, Elena from Bookshelf Remix. We're going to talk about Several People Are Typing by Calvin Kosolke. And before we get started, I just want to give you a chance to kind of tell our listeners a little bit about your podcast and what they can expect.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. So I started Bookshelf Remix with my friend Sophia, and we are two people who come from academia. I'm a philosopher and she does comparative literature. And we kind of bonded over reading fiction together and like really taking deep dives into it. And we decided to start a podcast that would look specifically at underrepresented authors and just really nerd out on themes specifically. So we specifically wanted it to have spoilers, so kind of like Book Solid, this idea that if you really want to discuss the book, you can't really worry about spoilers. And because I'm half Filipina and Sophia is Mexican American, we just felt like it was really refreshing to specifically focus on both like BIPOC authors, but also disabled authors, trans authors, LGBTQ, etc., or in books and translation as well. So it was just kind of a way to motivate ourselves to read books by underrepresented authors. And we just had so much fun in season one. And season two will be coming out shortly.
And I highly recommend it. I mean, if you're here listening to this podcast, clearly you like books. You like analyzing books. So definitely head over, check out Bookshelf Remix. You will not be disappointed. And yeah, I'm really excited to jump into this today.
Spoiler alert. Hey guys, just as a heads up, we will be revealing spoilers in this episode. If you haven't yet read the book or seen the show or film, this is a courteous reminder to proceed with caution.
It was interesting, in a word. That's the one word I will sum it up as. It was interesting.
Yeah, I feel like since I discovered the Lambda Award, which is like an award for like LGBTQIA like books and authors, I've slowly been like buying all of their books. I'm like, ooh, this looks cool and this looks cool. And this was definitely a type of book where I'm like, I'm interested, but it could also be a total flop because I don't know if people are aware, but Several People Are Typing is written as a Slack chat. So the kind of online working platform that people use. So it's very text-based and they have literal transcriptions of emojis, for example.
Yeah.
So it could have been like really gimmicky and I was a bit apprehensive.
Yeah, I was curious as to, like you said, I guess just how the story would be brought to life. And I know we talked about it a little bit before we started recording, but I was thoroughly impressed actually with the way the story was able to be told in this format and kind of the development of each character. Like you said, it could have gone wrong very easily and very quickly, but it still felt like a cohesive story from start to finish. It felt like the characters were really well developed. Like you could get a strong sense of each of their personalities. And I watched an interview with Calvin. I think it was on Good Morning America. And he was talking about how, since this is such a, it's lacking in a typical plot, I guess, and you have to really focus on the characters, that he created like a cheat sheet for each character's voice. Because I think it's really interesting that, you know, people in your life that you're close to, when you're texting them, you can immediately tell if it's someone else texting from their phone, just by punctuation, capitalization, just the general tone. And so like, that's what he did, is kind of create a cheat sheet of like, what is this person's tone going to be? And I felt like that was executed really well.
Yeah, because no one is really described physically in the book. And I guess that's interesting in the sense that it is a book about disembodiment, because the main character, Gerald, kind of gets aspired or like sucked into the Slack. So he's literally like a floating consciousness throughout most of the book. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was an interesting choice to not describe physically what any character looks like, really. I mean, we kind of have descriptions of Gerald from Pradeep, but yeah, I think it, for a book that has no descriptions, it really gives you a sense of place and a sense of character. So I think in that sense, that is a MasterChef move on Kosuke's part.
Definitely. And it's actually interesting that you say that, because I'm realizing as you're talking about it, while there weren't any physical descriptions, I definitely had an idea of what each character was like in my head. Like every time I saw their name come up, I had kind of created my own imagery for them based on how they spoke or how they were acting and things like that, which is kind of interesting to be able to place physical attributes to just someone's personality type.
Yeah, and that's it. Like, you don't realize it as you're reading, and then you think about it and you're like, oh, no one ever described what Trip looks like, but I immediately know what Trip looks like.
Exactly. You touched on Gerald a little bit, and I want to talk about him and his experience, because I guess he's technically the main character of this book. What were your kind of initial thoughts on Gerald or his predicament in general?
Well, the book opens with Gerald kind of saying, like, delete existence. And I was like, oh my God, this is so dark. What is going on? But it turns out that he had just been sucked into the Slack. And so he's trying to like delete himself and like reset and reboot inside his body. And it's just not working out. So I think one of the core aspects of this book is Gerald's discussions with Slackbot. Mm-hmm. So there is always like a Slackbot voice throughout this narrative. And we kind of see the evolution of like Gerald like being freaked out and trying to get out. And then Slackbot kind of learning more about Gerald and learning more about humanness in general to the eventual conclusion. But yeah, I mean, I like Gerald. I find like everyone in this book is pretty likable. Like even Trip, like he's kind of like douche bro likable. You're like, oh, Trip.
Oh, that's just Trip being Trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gerald, I feel like Gerald was really funny. I mean, the book itself, oh yeah, I don't think that's something we've touched on quite yet. The book itself was pretty funny. Like I was chuckling out loud, hilarious, which yeah. is, you know, sometimes you'll read a funny line in a book and in my head I'll be like, oh, haha, that was hilarious. But to actually be chuckling and laughing, and Gerald was a large part of that. His conversations with Slackbot were a large part of that. The voice that Calvin was able to give to Slackbot, it was quite funny and very, I think you mentioned this before we started recording, but like when reading it, I would have assumed that Slackbot, or reading the synopsis, I would have assumed that Slackbot is supposed to be evil, that he's mm-hmm. trying to, you know, take over someone's body. But you pose the question of, is Slackbot actually evil? Because all he wants, or it wants, is to experience what it is to be human. And so yeah. it's like, is there anything inherently evil about that? No, but the way he's doing it, you know, is that unethical?
Yeah, I mean, as I said in my intro, like I come from a philosophy background, and this idea of the brain in the jar, or the brain in the vat, or, you know, separating brains from bodies, like we've seen it in The Matrix, like it is something that has appeared throughout like human history of thought and even pop culture, this idea of like, am I my body? Am I my mind? Like, can we separate both? And I found that this book explored that topic in a really refreshing and whimsical way. So it wasn't like, oh, I'm being preached that about the dangers of AI. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, it's really, we go through Gerald's emotional journey of, you know, first wanting to be back in his body because he experiences that like radical separation, and then kind of being like, oh, it's kind of nice and quiet inside Slack as well. The commentary on he's so much more productive now that he's in Slack mm-hmm. is kind of dark.
Yeah, just like, a bit.
I have no bodily needs, so I can be productive at work. But then he kind of is like, well, I do miss some human things like experiencing sunsets. And the whole idea of him trying to explain to Slackbot what a sunset is, and then Slackbot eventually sends him like all the gifts of sunsets at the same time, and then he's like, this is incredible pain. And I don't know, those passages were just very lyrical and poetic, but I never felt that they were condescending.
Yeah, because you're right. The concept itself of what does it mean to be human is not, you know, a new idea. But like you're saying, the way that it's kind of conveyed in this book is, it makes you think. Just watching Gerald's experience of, like you said, when him going in, feeling that immediate terror that I think any of us would feel being separated from our bodies of like, I need to get back now. But then there's a point of the book, a not small portion of the book where he's okay with being there. Like he's telling Pradeep, you know, try to figure out how to get me back my body. Please make sure my body doesn't die. But for the meantime, this is actually kind of interesting. Or what is this experience like? And could I be okay being like this forever? Until he eventually gets back to the, like, no, I want to get back to my body now.
And just to be clear, Pradeep is one of his coworkers. And I think he was like sent by the rest of the office to check on Gerald because he had been like working from home for a while. And no one believes Gerald. Gerald is like constantly trying to be like, I'm stuck in Slackbot. And you're like, haha, funny bitch.
Yeah, the whole time, which was driving me insane for Gerald. I was like, please, can someone take him seriously?
And so at least like Pradeep is the one that goes and he sees like Gerald has kind of a comatose body. So he's like responsible for like keeping Gerald alive and like putting him in adult diapers and like feeding him like ensure. But I think it's really funny because he also like describes like all the things he tries to get Gerald back. He puts like a
Google like, glasses.
Virtual reality headset on the So again, comedy. It's comedy
and
gold.
Their interactions, Pradeep and Gerald's, are quite hilarious. Also, like them going back and forth about the beard. Like he was like, hey, your beard's actually filling in, it looks quite nice. He's like, oh really? Or like, don't shave it or something like that. Like they just keep going back and forth about little things. It is interesting to me that Pradeep, even after finding Gerald's body, doesn't say anything to the rest of their coworkers about like, hey, I found Gerald's body. Does Gerald tell him not to?
Oh yeah, I never thought of that. Yeah, he's
all he says is like, if I can't figure this out, then I can take you to a hospital or a research center or something. But he never tells the other coworkers like, hey, Gerald's actually telling the truth until the end.
That is so. Oh, well, I think, yes, because I think after that, like no one goes into the office except for Trip and the new person, Beverly. So like no one's in the office. Like for most of the book, they're all working.
It is really interesting. And I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure Calvin, because he was making a point on purpose about it. It just may have gone over my head, but I thought it was interesting how once one person gave an excuse or a reason about why they would be working from home, then everyone else, it was like, oh, I slept funny and my finger hurts, so I'm also working from home. Or, oh, I had an appointment come up, so I'll also be working from home. Like, it only took one person to say it, and then everyone was like, I'm working from home also. I just thought that was a funny touch because it happened a few times throughout the book.
And it's also kind of proof that you can work from home. Like, work is being done throughout this book. People are working. This is a PR firm. So they're all doing work.
And I want to clarify, I can't remember if we said this yet in the episode, but this book takes place and was written pre-COVID. So it ended up becoming much more timely than I'm sure the author intended it to be at the time. But yeah, it is a pre-COVID work from home situation. So they do have the option of going back and forth, I guess, at this company. I kind of wanted to talk about Doug a little bit. I think that's like their main boss.
Yes.
There was a scene in particular. Let me see if I can find it in my notes. Oh, I thought it was a really good critique on kind of the book in itself is a great critique on company culture or workplace culture. But there's a scene where everyone decides to work from home except for Trip. And he goes in to train Beverly because it's her very first day. And so Doug, his boss, like writes him on Slack and he thanks him for being the only one at the office and for helping with all the onboarding, and then finishes up their interaction by saying, I also saw that you charge the company card for sushi for lunch. It's too expensive. Next time get something like pizza. It was interesting to me because I felt like a lot of times companies don't value you beyond like what you can offer them. I feel like there's been a lot of discourse, especially in the pandemic. I know we're going through like the great resignation right now of people leaving jobs where they feel like they're being undervalued, and like, good for everyone. I love that for them. But I just felt like it was really interesting for Doug to be like, well, I love that you're the only one who was here. Thanks so much for helping out with this project. But next time order something cheaper for lunch. Like, they just don't really see you beyond what you can offer them. And I felt like that was a really interesting scene to throw in there.
And it's interesting you point that out because I hadn't noticed that particular dynamic. But now that you mention it, they have a discussion about how Gerald was kind of on shaky ground before all of this happened, like, he wasn't performing as well as they wanted him to. But now that he's stuck in Slack, he has nothing else to do. So he's so productive. And now they're like, oh, Gerald is amazing. Gerald is a model employee. So I think to that point where they're like, before they're like, oh, Gerald, like, we're trying to find a reason kind of to fire him. And now they're like, oh, Gerald is great. And that's it. Like, how are you valued by your coworkers really changes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't really care about you. And that's not true for every workplace. You know, every company culture is different, but I feel like it is a lot about output. And it's to the point where they don't even care to, like, he's telling them I'm not okay, but they don't care to check on him because they're like, well, you're getting your work done. You're actually getting more work done than we've ever seen you do. So whatever's happening, you know, keep it up. And so they just don't really think beyond or see him as a whole full person beyond, like.
And that also ties into, like, the other storyline that's happening where, so as I mentioned, they're a PR firm and one of the clients they have to deal with is like a dog food company that has been poisoned. And so they have to do lots of recalls. And so they kind of have to fix this PR nightmare. And one of the employees, Rob, is kind of in charge of it. So in the discussions that they have with Rob about dealing with this, they are constantly like alluding to like, okay, this is what the client wants, this is what you need to do. And they keep not answering pointedly some of his questions. And that becomes like a pivotal point of the story, like at the very end. And I think it's really interesting. Again, we're like, okay, we communicate, but then because it's in this kind of text format, we are forced to see like when, especially your superiors, like your bosses, like pointedly ignore you.
Mm-hmm. And it happens so many times. And that's actually one of my biggest pet peeves. Even when you're just texting someone in general, like outside of a workplace, when you send them a few messages and they only reply to one, it's like, oh, like, you know, just answer me, please. And I wondered why she kept avoiding that question. Mm. And even with the big reveal of the book, so if you've read it or if you haven't, he generally is asking in reference to a consumer profile. Yeah. So he's asking about a consumer profile that he has to like write copy on or using that voice or something like that. And even if, because Lydia, we find out, was the third person. How do I bring this up for people who haven't read the book?
Yeah, I know. There's like a series of people and that we assume are all working in this office. And Lydia is one of them. And at first, like, she sounds normal. Like, as you mentioned, sorry, at the beginning, Kasuki had like specific voices. So like her voice sounds like it just fits in with everyone else. And then she starts being like, I'm working from home and I hear the dogs howling. And then all of her interactions start being about like how she's haunted by this howling. And eventually she kind of disappears and Rob mentions her. It's like, oh, Lydia said this. And everyone else is like, Lydia who? And so Rob is like, what are you talking about? And like, she's in the Slack. And then they go back and like, she's been deleted from the Slack. But we don't hear Slackbot say anything about this. So at this point, we're just like, what is going on? And then Rob finds out that Lydia is actually the name of a consumer profile. So it's kind of like he used a profile, but it was a real person. Like, actually, all of the consumer profiles turned out to be real people.
Which is another, like, this book, it's so interesting. Like, it just throws you for a lot of loops. Like, I guess, like, plot twists. I wasn't expecting many plot twists given the content of the book. But I just don't get, like, even why Carolyn, if she didn't hear Lydia in the chat, she didn't think Lydia existed beyond the consumer profile, why didn't she ever just answer him when he asked about the third profile? Like, she could have easily just said, oh, it's Lydia, or resent it or something. So it's just like, I don't know, kind of curious to me as to why she went out of her way so much to avoid talking about it.
I mean, I'm not sure if she went out of her way. I read that as exemplifying the fact of how easy it is to just go on with what you have to say in your own idea and not actually listen and communicate with people. And it's made obvious because it's in text form in front of our eyes. But that happens in verbal conversation as well.
Like, it's more of her just being like, I said what I needed to say. I gave him the information. He can figure out the rest kind of thing. Or, like, Carolyn always had the energy to me of, like, I'm very busy with what I'm doing. And, like, she was always running from thing to thing. And I feel like in her mind, she felt like, I'm busy. He can figure it out type of thing. Like, she gave people just what they needed to move on to their next task, but wasn't really available for any kind of further assistance. Like, she didn't want to play babysitter or something. Even though she wasn't babysitting, he just genuinely had a question.
Yeah, exactly. And then he flips the script later on where he refuses to answer her questions, which I found very satisfying.
Yeah, Carolyn, it's funny because, like you said, we don't get much context outside of what's happening in the workplace, but she didn't seem very... Neither Carolyn nor Doug, which are the two, I would say, like, higher managers. Ranking. Yeah. Didn't seem like great people at all. Yeah, like, hardly at all. It's funny because I think I mentioned this when we were kind of messaging before we started recording, that this book, when I finished it, it kind of gave me the same feeling as Leave the World Behind by Rahman Alam, in that I was kind of just like, okay, when I finished, I was like, all right, sure. I didn't even know if I liked it. This one, I can tell I enjoyed it more so than Leave the World Behind at first. But then when Indy and I recorded our episode on it, I just started realizing all of these things, like, oh my gosh, he's actually a genius, and this book is kind of great in the points that he's making. And so that's what I was hoping would come out of recording this episode, and even just talking about it, I'm realizing it. But I don't know if this is me reaching, but when I was reading the book, it kind of felt like maybe a commentary on, in some ways, with, like, the advent of social media and as technology advances, we're more connected than we ever have been. But it's like the breadth is there, but there's not a lot of depth to the way that we communicate with each other online anymore. Like, in some of these Slack conversations, like, yeah, they're at each other's, like, you have your coworkers at your fingertips, basically. But then when you look at what's actually being said, or the miscommunications or the half communications, it's like no one's really communicating with each other, even though you can faster and more conveniently than ever before.
Yeah, it's especially exemplified when they start talking solely in emojis. And I guess we should bring up that one of the, like, inside jokes of this team is that they use the dusty stick emoji, which I had to Google because I had never found out. And apparently it's a Slack-only emoji. So basically this book is an advert for Slack. but basically it's like a stick with, like, brown, like, hay around it. Like, it's very strange. And there's a debate on the internet about whether it's a positive or a negative emoji. But they kind of use it as an eye roll emoji in this book, of being like, oh, stop being so, like, silly. Mm-hmm. And so, but sometimes they just, like, send dusty sticks back and forth. And at this point, you've devolved into, like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Trip and Beverly specifically, like, their interactions just became more and more frustrating and confusing, because it was just like eye emoji, dusty stick, thumbs up. Like, that's all they were saying to each other as the book wore on. It just became only emojis.
And we should say that Trip and Beverly, like, when Trip is, like, quote unquote training her, onboarding her, they have sex on Doug's desk. And so, like, I think a lot of their communicating in emojis relates to the fact that they know that Doug, as the boss, can read their private Slacks. And so they're kind of, like, as a precaution, they start using emojis, and then it kind of devolves and they just, like, use a bunch of emojis. But I was thinking about that, and I think, yeah, sure, it is a commentary on how superficial, like, workplace relationships can be. But I will still maintain that it is kind of a symptom and not a cause. In the sense that I could, one reason I could really relate to this book, even though I've never worked in a so Slack dependent workplace, like, that is just not my experience of work. But I could relate to it because I recognize the human interactions. And so I feel like, sure, it's a commentary on Slack and capitalism and all of these things, but it's kind of holding up a mirror to what happens generally between human beings. So in that sense, when I say like this book wasn't preachy, that's what I mean. It's not just like, oh, look at evil technology. It's kind of like, look at how I can show you through technologies what it means to be human in this specific area.
Which are interesting because they're polar opposites, essentially, right? Like being human or being a robot or technology as a concept, it's interesting that he could use that as a mechanism mm-hmm. to exemplify the human experience.
I mean, I'm going to get super nerdy, but like techne in ancient Greek is just a tool. So technology is a discourse about tools. So I think Kasulke is like being like, okay, if we're using like Slack as a tool, mm-hmm. what can it reveal about ourselves?
I like that. We just cracked the code. And I wanted to make sure we got this in the episode too, because, and I'm not going to take credit, you mentioned this when we were like pre-recording, chatting about it, that as a reader, we kind of feel like we are eavesdropping on what's going on in the story. And then we kind of like put two and two together that like, well, in a way we kind of are as the reader and as Gerald, because Gerald figured out a way once he's in Slack to like hack into everybody's conversations. So Gerald is eavesdropping. And so it's just like a really interesting way to kind of marry the two of like, we're eavesdropping while Gerald's eavesdropping. So are we just from the point of view of Gerald this entire time, or?
Yeah. So it's kind of like a roundabout way of using second person narration, like how N.K. Jemisin does that in the fifth season, or even Carmen Maria Machado in The Dream House, this idea of like using you as a way of like drawing in the reader. And I feel like Kasulke does that without ever using second pronoun, which is interesting.
Yeah.
So I think it is genius, possibly.
It is. Like it's one of those books. It's just the more that you discuss it and analyze it, I feel like the more there's to be found. And was that purposeful? Was it just happenstance? Like, I don't know. But either way, I feel like this was a really, I don't want to just keep saying interesting, because I feel like sometimes that has a negative connotation depending on how you say it. But it was a very interesting piece of writing. I don't really know how to describe it. And if you haven't read it, read it. It's like 250 yeah. pages, and it's all Slack messages. You'll read it in like an hour and a half if you fly through it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just, for me, what really sells it, like more than the novelty of the format, is the fact that it's legitimately enjoyable and funny. Mm-hmm. Like, so we can sit here and we can discuss like, oh, there are all these layers of like employer-employee dynamics, capitalism, technology. And so we can have fun doing that, but you can also just read it and be like, this is really fun. So I think that's a mark of a good book, when you're like, you don't see the strings that are being pulled behind the scenes. Like, you can just like have fun watching the puppet show. And then if you want, you can learn about how the mechanisms work.
Yeah. And like, and I think it's dependent upon each reader too. I was looking, you know, through reviews other people have made of the book, and it, I mean, I guess this is true for anything, but it is one of those novels. It feels like you can just see what you want to see from it. You get what you want to get from it.
Yeah.
And I feel like because we have a podcast where we talk about books, maybe we try to look a little deeper in general at what we're reading, because it's like, oh, like I want to discuss this, you know, what are things that are sticking out to me? But yeah, you can take it at its face value and just be like, that was a fun, strange, bizarre little read, or, you know, kind of look deeper into it in the way that we're doing.
I think we should talk about the point in the plot where Slackbot takes over Gerald's body.
Some of the best lines from Slackbot come in this entire scene.
Oh my god, it was so amazing, because Slackbot is experiencing what it's like to have a body. Mm-hmm. And so he's basically like a child. He's like, everything is new, everything is wonderful, food tastes amazing.
Or he was like, he didn't understand being full, like he was like stomach. Or, like, he wasn't saying stomach hurts, because he can't say stomach hurts, but he was basically just saying, like, in a weird roundabout Slackbot way, that they were, like, uncomfortable or something. And Pradeep's like, yeah, you ate an entire...
It was, like, the center.
The center hurts. And Pradeep's like, yeah, you ate an entire meatball sub for lunch. So, like, just teaching him, like, yeah, that means you're full.
And then, like, because Slackbot has been interacting with Gerald and spying on Gerald's like interactions with Pradeep, he has found out, like, you know, that Gerald misses certain things about having a body. And so he's kind of interpreting that as he's experiencing having a body for the first time. And so he has, like, the funniest things to say about, like, sex. He calls it, like, ultimate achievement or, like, amazement, extraordinary. I was like,
and, like, I think you mentioned this too before we started, but that it's just like the way Slackbot is talking is just, I can't remember if you said this on air too or not, but that it's just, it's Slackbot like reconfiguring everything that it's heard and then like trying to spit it back out into a coherent sentence, but it's never a coherent sentence because it's a bot.
And then Gerald is also slowly devolving and like turning more into Slackbot, which is scary.
Yeah, like certain that idea, that whole sequence was really, I was worried for Gerald's fate because like certain words when he was trying to tell his coworkers, because towards the end, finally, he gets people to believe him outside of Pradeep. And so when they would be messaging back and forth, certain words that they would say would like trigger that, like an automatic response, like that bots give you if you say like help or help center or something like that. And so like he'd be in the middle of a sentence and he'd be like, refer to our help center for more tips, and then like go back into what he was saying. And he said it was painful, I think, actually, every time that happened, right?
Because I feel like he was ripped from his body, but now I guess his like psyche was being ripped from him.
Yeah. I was curious. So I've read a few books that have And I just like lately, I don't know what's going on, but I keep reading books that have an ending where it seems like your protagonist is okay at the end. And then like the last sentence of the book is you realizing like whatever they were trying to prevent or stop ended up happening. Excuse me. So I kind of thought that's the ending we were going to get here, in that we thought Gerald was back into his body. And then the last line of text would be something like Slackbot-esque, where we're like, oh, I guess the flip never really happened, or like Gerald's actually stuck in there. I was convinced that was the ending.
It's like, thank you, so help center is happy to help.
Like, oh. Yeah, or something like that, where you're like, oh, like I feel like I've read so many books that ended like that lately. So I thought that's where we were going. I was happy to see Gerald back in his body, but
I guess that's kind of a last point. Is the only thing that really I have an issue with in the book, or that gives me pause, I should say, is that, okay, so Slackbot is having the time of its life in Gerald's body, being like, the world is new, I feel all the feelings, and Slackbot is very horny. So Slackbot was eavesdropping on Trip and Beverly, like, talking about their sex, and their, like, horizontal amazement, or whatever they call it. And so Slackbot is very curious. And meanwhile, Pradeep has moved Gerald's body to his apartment just because it's easier to take care of the body that way. And so Pradeep has kind of like grown fond of Gerald's body. And like also like he's been talking to Gerald all this time. And so he's kind of into it. And then Slackbot in Gerald is like very horny. And so Pradeep and Slackbot Gerald end up having sex. And then Pradeep tells Gerald, and Gerald is like, oh man, I wish I had been there, like, in my body. And this is kind of how they admit to each other that they have feelings for one another, and it's the cute, like, romance. But part of me is just like, but Pradeep, you had sex with Gerald's body without his consent.
No, I'm right there with you. I thought, like, when I read that, I was like, I think I might have gasped audibly, just because it's not... First of all, Gerald was very calm about this. And I guess, like you said, it's because Gerald had feelings for Pradeep. So he was like, okay with Pradeep having sex with his body with him not in it. But to me, I was like, consent's very much an issue there, because yeah, sure, Slackbot consented. But like we said, it's not Slackbot's body. Mm-hmm. And it was also just very, the idea of having sex with a body and you know the mind is elsewhere. Like, I feel like it crossed a lot of boundaries, and I personally didn't think that was okay. And it's interesting that he kind of threw that into the book at all, because it was in the last, 15 pages, I feel like, that happened. And maybe he brought it up so that people could have the conversation that we're having about it. Like, was that inappropriate? Was that non-consensual? Or can a robot even consent to sex? Like, you know, it was very interesting, but I didn't agree.
Yeah, because, like, the robot is, like, colonizing Gerald's body. He's, like, taking it by force. Basically. Like, you're just like, it's not your body. You're not allowed to use it. But it's also, like, you know, Pradeep has sex with Slackbot Gerald and then finds out that Gerald likes him. So how did that play out in his mind? Like, what if Gerald had not been into him? Like...
Exactly. He kind of, like, took advantage of a situation because he had feelings for Gerald from it's weird because he had feelings for Gerald, it seems, from talking to Gerald's psyche. And then I guess maybe in turn that made him attracted
to
Gerald physically.
I think he's, like, there's something to be said about taking care of someone. So I can totally buy that by taking care of Gerald's body whilst also, like, speaking to Gerald through Slack, he could grow attached. So I buy that, this idea of, like, the care and the proximity. But still, as you say, like, you know he's not in there.
Yeah, it's not really him. It's the thing that's taken over his body and, like, forced him into Slack. So it's like, why don't we get Gerald out of Slack and then you guys can have sex?
It's like, kind of like having sex with the evil twin, but...
Yeah, it was very, very strange. And, I mean, it led to, like, the final pages of the book are Pradeep and Gerald, like, getting together. Like, I think Gerald says something like, oh, I'm going to walk to your apartment. Because they live together now. Because Pradeep was taking care of his body. So he's like, I'm going to walk because I miss my legs. And I'll see you when I get home. And, like, they're together, it seems. But, yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it all works out in the end. But I can't help but think of, this is kind of a trope of, like, 1980s. Romance novels of, like, I will assault this woman and then she will learn to like it. Like,
yeah, it was like to do it and then to do it and then come back and be like, oh, this happened, sorry, but just letting you know. Like, oh, you mean you did something to my body without asking me? And, like, then I don't know, just to come after the fact and be like, just letting you know this happened. It's very, like, he's very blasé about it, I guess. They both were. So, yeah, and that's, like, the one complaint that I've seen most people have with the book as well, is just that scene didn't land well or sit well with people.
Yeah, because for me, it's, like, don't just include sexual assault for the sake of it. Like, I feel like,
Yeah, just be like, just sprinkle that in there a little bit, and then the book's over. It's just like, what?
But read the book and let us know what you think.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of literature, is that we're all going to have different opinions, and I love hearing opinions that are different from my own.
Is there any irredeemable person? I know you and India have the irredeemable character.
Honestly, nobody was that horribly offensive. I mean, what Pradeep did was kind of irredeemable, because, like, yikes. The closest I can think of is Doug, because he's just kind of like that stereotypical boss energy that of, like, a boss you don't really like that much or care about you. But actually, no, like, I wouldn't say anyone was horribly offensive throughout this book. First one I've read in a while where I can't, like, pinpoint someone as being just awful.
I mean, I will say I do like that Doug, because he doesn't know that Tripp and Beverly had sex on his desk and broke it. He keeps, like, tipping the managerial staff, like, the custodial really staff. I was like, I know this comes from this weird kind of, like, class guilt, but I'm into it. Like, yes, tip the custodial staff.
Like, oh, and his, like, to-do list, like, the sections that were, like, his little to-do list for himself were pretty funny as well. He was like, buy pears, the good pears, research good pears. Like, he was really into pears.
I tell you, this
I thought that was funny. Is
hilarious, and I will definitely read Calvin Kosolke's next book, just because I'm so curious,
definitely,
like, what he does. But yeah, I'm glad we picked this together, and I'm glad we got to discuss it.
Me too. For those of you, I guess you wouldn't know because we haven't said it yet, but I will be on Bookshelf Remix for their second season. We're going to be covering The Perishing by, I can't remember,
Natasha Dion.
Yeah. So if you go subscribe to Bookshelf Remix, you can see that episode when it comes out. And we also have some exciting news. So it's all very much in the early stages. We don't have, like, a release date or anything quite yet, but we are both huge fans of Gilmore Girls. And so we have like a Gilmore Girls analysis podcast that will be coming out TBD. So we already have a bunch of ideas for episodes that we want to do. And just to clarify, this isn't going to be like a episode by episode analysis. It's more just going to be analyzing themes that we've noticed, certain characters, things like that. So
we've already identified 18 themes.
So. Yeah. And that was just like in the span of a couple of days. I've been wanting to dissect this show for so long and to meet someone who has like the same level of just like critique and excitement about the show is very exciting for
me. And like, so. I know the show inside out. I've probably seen it like at least 7 times from beginning to end, like, and then plus like random episodes that I consult. But yeah,
so
I'm fully invested in the world of Stars Hollow. And yeah, I mean, I don't have that many people in my life who like share my obsession with Gilmore Girls. Mm-hmm. And so I'm so glad that we found each other.
I know.
I guess we can announce the name so they can follow us on Instagram and stuff. You're so we are calling it Women of Questionable Morals. If you know, you know. So I think it's something like a deep dive.
The Gilmore Girls deep dive, yeah.
Deep dive, yeah.
Hi all, this is Editing Soraya, and I just wanted to pop in and let you know that Women of Questionable Morals is now live. So our first 2 episodes are up. First one is kind of just an introduction and us breaking down the pilot and all the promises that it makes for the rest of the series. Our second episode is on Rory and Jess. A very hot topic, I know. And our third episode will be coming out on Friday, June 10th. So we're going to be releasing our episodes tri-weekly on Fridays as a nod to Friday Night Dinners. And I will link it down below in the show notes. If you're all into Gilmore Girls, be sure to head over, check it out, subscribe. We also have a giveaway going on where you can be entered to win the official Gilmore Girls cookbook. So as always, thanks for listening, and I hope to see you over there.